and welcome to today's Raging Bull podcast. We occasionally like to add guest interviews from traders and experts from Raging Bull's Elite Traders Chat Room. In the Raging Bull Elite Chat Room, we hold live trading sessions with Raging Bull's traders, elite members, and our invited guests. These sessions are hosted by our Elite Chat Room host, Hitha Herzog. It's my pleasure now to introduce Hitha and one of our special guests to the Raging Bull podcast.
Good afternoon, Elite Room. It's Hitha Herzog, your host. And I also have the amazing, the awesome, the ever brilliant Dave Lucas. He is one of our gurus here at Raging Bull, as you know, and someone that I tend to go to a lot when I want more information about what is happening with the economy on a macro level. So we know that these jobs numbers have been reported out today. And by the way, Dave, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here with you and everybody out there.
So, as I was saying, we know that these jobs numbers were, the unemployment numbers were reported out earlier today. We're seeing massive layoffs, massive amount of people unemployed to the tune of 14.7%. Mm-hmm. We're looking at an unemployment number. The analysts who were giving the estimates were expecting 16%. It came in a little bit lower, still higher than we've seen since the 40s, we're seeing the markets turn green. I wanted to bring you in here because you're the person that can really, for me anyway, explain why is this happening? Without me making calls to the Federal Reserve right now, Dave, please tell us what is happening right now.
Well, so we got a number of things going on here, right? So first off, it is a travesty that we've got 20.5 million people unemployed in the span of less than a month. And so, well, I think what they talked about, 16%, we came in at 14.7, you know, did it really matter? It's still the worst since the Great Depression. And it'll probably get worse because we're not done yet. We just had 3 million more this week file for unemployment. So this isn't over yet. So it is, it's absolutely a travesty in the, for anyone who is, you know, been furloughed or lost their job during this time. So with that being said, out of the way, then why is the market rallying? Right? Why are we going up in spite of this? Well, they're really important to understand is always remember the market instrument trading on what's in the future. And it's also trading on what it believes is going to happen. So this number was already priced in. I think we all knew this was coming. I don't think anybody that is watching or listening to this thought that we were not going to have just horrible numbers, right? So there's no surprise news here. If anything, it's a little bit better because we're at 14.7 and not the 16% that analysts were looking at. So that's one thing. But a lot of people also don't understand that much of how our financial system actually works. If I asked somebody, or I even asked you, what is our money? A lot of people wouldn't be able to truly answer what that is. Our money is actually debt. So the way the Federal Reserve System works, and I'm not going to go on a huge tangent about this, but the way that it works and the way that our principal way of printing money is, I mean, have you guys wondered why, although you can conjure $1 trillion out of thin air and your taxes aren't going up or anything like that, right? And it happens because of the way the Reserve System works. And so what happens is essentially is the Congress creates a piece of paper that is a government bond or debt. They hand it over to the Fed. The Fed writes a check that is really just, you know, out of thin air, gives it to the government. That gets deposited. And then poof, money's created. That's literally how this happens. And then what happens is once that check is cashed by the government, it goes into the commercial banks. And then we have a fractional reserve system that's 10 to 1, meaning they can loan out $9 for every $1 they get. And so the expansion of the monetary supply happens. Okay. So if you want to really learn this stuff well, you can read a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, which details the history of the Federal Reserve. It's a unbelievable
read.
Creature
from Jekyll Island. I just want to make sure of it.
Okay. It's an unbelievable, historical lesson in the history of central banks up and through the Fed and everything else. But the point is that our money is actually debt, right? And so what really affects the market, especially in these times, and you saw this in 2008 and everything else, is credit. When credit dries up, and the banks can't loan out those $9 for everyone, you start to see a contraction, right? Even if they're cutting rates to zero and nobody's borrowing, that hurts the banking system. That hurts. When our money supply gets contracted, that causes recessions effectively. And so what we've got in this case, the market, you know, 50% already back up from its March lows and heading higher, is we don't have a credit crunch going on. Credit's easily available. People are still able to get credit, even in the midst of people unemployed. Right now, you're seeing bond borrowing for corporate bonds at the highest level they've been in, gosh, probably ever. Boeing just got $25 billion like that, right?
Yep.
And so credit, and this is what you see the Fed doing, is basically just, hey, unlimited credit at basically 0% rates, you know, and so they know this because they want to keep that expansion of the money supply. Now, in the future, does that hurt us with inflation and all that stuff? It's yet to be seen. But that's essentially why you see the market keep going up and it being able to expand, because there's no credit crunch happening to really stop that market, and that money's flowing into the market. And so that's why you get.
So that's a really good point. And I think that's what people talk about, paralleling what happened in 2008 to what's happening now. And there is really no parallel, because in 2008, there was a massive credit crunch. I mean, everyone has heard this term, too big to fail. That's what we were talking about. We saw banks, in fact, my former employer, Bear Stearns, go completely out of business, which, you know, it's very odd. I think I've said this before. It's odd to have something like that, a bank, which was your first employer, not on your resume anymore. But what's very different is that now we don't have that credit crunch. I guess my question to you then is, what are some of the signs? We know something is probably going to be happening around the corner. What are some of the signs that we should be aware of that are red flags that could potentially indicate that there will be a credit crunch? Or do you even think that that's even on the table, given the way that the Federal Reserve is printing cash right now?
It's all going to depend how we start to open up and come out of this, right? Already, some banks are upping their credit score limits and things to get loans and that sort of thing. But interest rates and everything are still very, very low. Remember, interest rates are what really hurt the credit, right? The more you have to pay for credit, the less you want to borrow. And so as long as interest rates are at extremely low levels, which they look to be for the foreseeable future, then, you know, credit is relatively easily available, right? And so that's what the Fed learned that lesson, I think, from 2008 and bust from the past, of not allowing a credit crunch to happen, because that's, again, shrinking the money supply basically is what ruins that expansion of the economy, right? So that's what's happening now. And honestly, what I see in the future, you can see treasury bills, treasury rates, you know, the 10, the 20, the 30, you know, really, you know, 1% under, you know, 0.58, you know, basis points. And so I see that happening. It's like almost like where Japan's been forever, like almost 0% interest rates and low growth in that sense. We're kind of getting ourselves into that same type of thing, because we're now at $25 trillion in debt. We continue to print. Fed's going to add another $3 trillion this coming quarter is what it sounds like. So we just keep adding to that. And so that's could lead us into just a very low interest rate environment for several years or more to come. And so, again, credit stays open during that time. It stays available.
So if we are then in a low interest rate zone, credit stays open. You know, we had a huge run up until this point. And what goes up?
Fueled by printing money and, you know, loose credit and all of that, right?
Yeah. Right. So inevitably, what goes up has to come down. I think what's on top of everyone's mind at this point is, what are the next indicators? How do we, if the economy is going to have to come and you know, regulate itself at one point, whether that's in form of a recession or if we're in one right now, which I think, was it you that was saying that we are in a recession? It might have been a different asset manager that we had in here.
No, but I mean, I think the consensus is, you know, we've got one quarter of negative GDP. The second quarter is coming that we're going to have negative GDP. So that technically qualifies as a recession, but this is different in the fact that we manufactured it. We weren't We went at the end of the business cycle to where credit was starting to get crunched and credit was starting to pull back. And, you know, people were starting to have a hard time with that. We were doing pretty well up into this point. And then we self-imposed this on ourselves. So this has never been done before. So to honestly say how we're going to come out of this or how it's going to work is anybody's really guess or opinion at this point, mm-hmm. because no, we've never been through it before. And that's the honest truth. You know, I'm looking at it, it's hilarious. I'm seeing, you know, like Muhammad El Arian will come on and it's the end of the world, according right. to him, for the next few months. But then I saw another guy from Wharton Business School saying 2021 is going to be the greatest year in the history of the stock market. And we're going to have new highs. And it's all over the place. And so the thing that I really think is important is watching the macro factors, watching credit. And there's another great resource for you if you really want to understand the credit markets. It's by Ray Dalio. It's about a 30-minute video. And if you don't know who Ray Dalio is, he's head of Bridgewater, probably considered one of the most, if not the most successful hedge fund of all time. In fact, they got caught in this. They actually took a pretty big loss over the last few months. But he has a video called How the Economic Machine Works. And it's about 30 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube. And it's one of the best courses on understanding how credit works at a macro level in the markets that I've ever seen. In fact, each year I put it out several times a year in my newsletters to my students stuff to give them a refresher on it because it's so important to understand.
All right. So that's Ray Dalio's tell me
how the economic machine works.
Ray Dalio, How the Economic Machine Works. You could just search that in YouTube mm-hmm. and that'll come right up. We have a couple questions in chat right now. Andrew, this is from a question in the chat room. The question is, what tools does the Fed have in its disposal and do they have any more tools left? Mm-hmm.
Man, they've gone to new tools that never even existed before at this point. So, they still have, they could go negative on rates if they wanted to. You could have that. They can control the money supply some, so in fact, I won't go into it, but the Great Depression was actually manufactured by the Fed. So by them not controlling the money supply well enough. So they've learned a lot of lessons over the years from it. So the tools that they typically use, the discount window, all that stuff, I think is what they're going to continue to use. They're going to prop things up every way that they can. And in a sense, kind of hope that commerce comes back and starts to take over and stuff. They're like a backstop for right now. I would say one thing is for more certain is that you're going to see the market tend to go up. It's going to be inflationary for the markets because when you give $6 trillion to the banks and that sort of stuff, it's just inevitable where that's going to flow to and what that's going to do. So I think over time, the markets are going to continue to go higher. I'm not going to say we're going to get to like new highs in the next month or anything like that. You're going to have definitely some ups and downs in the market, but ultimately over time, you're going to keep going higher because of the inflationary aspect of printing money in general.
Usually,
and when you have zero return on your savings account, there's not that many other places to go.
Right, right. Exactly. In the last couple of days, we've seen markets open in the green, kind of fade into the red. It looks like mm-hmm. we're going to be closing in the green right now. As we prepare, I do this all the time. I speak in the royal we. I don't mean to do that. I mean you all trading out there, the elite members. But as our members go and prepare their portfolios towards the end of this day and into Monday, what are some of the key factors that they should be aware of and what you're going to be looking at as you start thinking about the next week?
Well, one thing I'm watching in the short term, meaning the next few weeks, is there is a huge squeeze setting up on the S&P chart. So the S&P, for those of you that know how I look at things with the fractal energy indicators that I use, the energy is pretty charged up in the charts right now, and we have a squeeze setting up on the charts. And anytime you have a squeeze on the charts, you have to think of it like water in your hand. If you squeeze it, it comes flying out of there, right? So a daily chart gets charged up, and it can't stay charged for very long, typically 5 to 7 trading days before it makes its move. You add a squeeze into that, and you've got on the precipice of a pretty decent sized move coming out of that squeeze. And I think we're pretty close to that. So I can't tell which direction it's really going to go because it's right in the middle of the range right now. The market's kind of walked sideways, charging that up and bringing that squeeze in like that in the chart. And so I'm just going to let that play out and just, you know, wait till it signals its real direction and then play it from there. And that's going to play out over the next 2 weeks or so in the markets. And so that's the shorter time. On the longer time, time frames, like the weekly and the monthly charts, we're still pretty low on energy. We're pretty still at the bottom, and we're kind of just plotting along, charging up over time. So from a long-term trending standpoint, it's very hard for us to go on a long-term trend right now. You're going to have the daily chart kind of throw its tantrums up and down in the interim while these bigger charts charge up. And you're going to be in just a big range, essentially, for the next couple months, I'd say, as we get into the summer until these bigger timeframes charge up and are ready to trend again, which makes sense because they'll be ready just in time going into the election season and all of that stuff will happen. And we've seen what happens during those times. From the last few elections we've had.
Anything you could give us in terms of a preview to your watch list going into next week?
You know, I do that on Friday afternoon. So I have it after this, I'm getting into that. You know, I've been careful not to trade over earnings. I've been waiting for a lot of stocks after earnings to get into. You've got some ones right now that are now past earnings and that are looking pretty good. I'm still a fan of the airline stocks. You know, American Airlines is past earnings. It's sitting at about 10 bucks. You can sell puts on it at $3 and get 20, 30% returns on your money. I mean, for me, it's a great return on risk. And in getting, if I get put the stock, it's at a fire sale price. And so I'm very contrarian in that. Oil, remember last time I was on here, we were talking about it was the end of oil and oil was negative $30 a barrel. And I talked about how, look, this is just a circumstantial issue that happened with oil, with the way that the futures contracts were and the timing coming up with it. Look at where oil's back at now. I invested into oil. I still think oil is a great play. I think still think the XLE, XOM, Chevron's another one that's really good. Those are the marquee bellwethers. If you want to invest, you can get in, great, put or put spread trades from my standpoint into those. So I still think being a contrarian is a good way to go in all of this.
I have to ask you, because I cover retail, by trade, I'm a retail analyst. So that's the sector that I can talk most intelligently about. But what is your take on retail? And if you are an investor and you're looking to get into some of these retail stocks, I talk about how, I do actually, we didn't do it today. So maybe this is our retail detail, but on Fridays, we do a segment called Retail Detail. And I talk about how JCPenney is now trading at 23 cents. I mean, literally a penny stock. Macy's really took a hit, pulling down credit, drawing down on, almost a couple billion dollars of credit. Mm-hmm. We are on the precipice of seeing another industry shakeup with retail. Right. Are there any picks that you may have sight? Or I guess maybe... Mm-hmm. Not necessarily picks, but what would you say, in general about the retail industry? And is it mirroring some of the industries that you outlined, such as airline and oil?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. And I think we saw Neiman Marcus filed for bankruptcy week too. Yes. And so like the issue with retail, like here's the difference that I see. Like oil, you're always going to need it. Everything's made out of oil. That drink, that plastic straw you're drinking out of there, and everything that contains that drink is made out of oil.
This is actually metal.
Or metal. Oil goes into making that too. So, okay. So oil is always going to be needed. It's a necessity. Mm-hmm. Airlines, we've already consolidated the airlines down to a point where we don't have, they're too big to consolidate at this point. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a need for the airlines. They're going to be smaller, but they're still going to be needed and be around. Retail is a little bit different. There's a lot of retail that may not be needed, and it's really a choice of a consumer. So if I'm looking at retail, I'm looking at very niche type things that, have some staying power. It stuck around. It looked like it was on its deathbed for a while. And it's a stock that's done pretty well. It's Crocs.
Yep.
Crocs shoes, CROX. So, it's a niche. Skechers is a niche, companies like Nike. So the shoe wear, because people are going to buy shoes and they're going to need shoes.
Lululemon. It's unbelievable how well that stock is doing right now. They have really good fundamentals.
And so you have to look at like a JCPenney, you may not need a JCPenney anymore. Right. Because you've got Amazon, you can go buy these things from all these different places. So there are things like that that I'd be careful with. Very speculative if you're going to do like a JCPenney at 23 cents a share and stuff. But there's a lot of these niche companies that have a very loyal following that'll keep buying their goods. And so that's something that if I'm looking at retail, I'm looking at things like.
Okay. We have a couple questions. This is from Wayne. He asks, how does the Fed supplying dollar swap lines for other countries affect the U.S. economy, either short or long term? Does the Fed just print more or does our dollar supply contract?
All it does is transfer wealth from the United States to those other countries.
Okay.
That's transferring our wealth and, you know, we eat that with inflation.
Got it.
So why is the dollar lost 95% of its value or more since we came off the gold standard and everything? Because when we do that, we transfer that money over there, we print it, we transfer it over. That stealth tax of inflation hits us. We don't really realize it, but that's what's happening. So so that's the answer.
Got it. Okay. And then Mark asks, can you ask Dave, please, does he still do his Sunday review?
I do. It comes out every Sunday at 5:00.
Sunday at 5:00. Okay. And Matt G, as you know, Matt Galpin, he asks, how do you feel about virtual meetings, unemployment and work from home? Corporate policies will affect some of the all-time high home prices in city/corporate areas. Could it crush REITs?
It's going to depend on what the REITs are focused in, obviously. It's actually a good question. I thought you were going to go somewhere else with it in general about the changing behavior of companies and people. I don't know if you, so I think some of you know this, my largest business is in the travel space. So I've got a front row seat to the carnage. I don't know if anybody looked, if you looked at breaking apart the 20 plus million today of unemployed, almost 8 million of that was in the hospitality and travel sector. It was by far and above the largest sector, you know, getting hit. And so you are going to have behavior changes. Companies at this point in time have realized that they can do business via things like this, like we're doing right now, Zoom or GoToMeeting or any of those type of tools. And they're also realizing that maybe they don't need as much headcount to do so. So, you know, a V-shaped recovery, I think I've said before, I think is out. I think it's more U-shaped. And will the employment just come rushing back? I don't think so. I think it's going to happen over a long period of time. We may not get back to the unemployment levels that we were at before, the low unemployment levels for a while. And so you're going to have behavioral changes. That's why, you know, less hotel stays, less travel on airlines, that stuff's going to naturally happen. When it comes to REITs, when it comes to higher value properties, it depends on where you're at. Is San Francisco going to change much? I don't think so. San Francisco, seated Silicon Valley, some of the best companies that are some of the companies doing the best in this are seated there. You're still going to have that. But other areas of the country, you certainly could see real estate get hit, especially if people that are being laid off can't pay their bills, can't pay for their mortgages, can't pay for that type of stuff. You're going to start to see that. And that's where we'll get into months down the road, seeing how the Fed might handle that, because then you do get into more of a 2008 issue with, you know, the same type of thing with homes that people can't pay for and right, mortgages being defaulted and so on.
We're going to have, it's interesting. Next week, we're going to have the CEO of Goldcrest, who is oversees a farm REIT. And then we're also going to have the CEO of a company who is buying up some of these mortgages to help make sure that people are staying in their homes, because he feels that the next crisis is going to be a mortgage crisis in the next upcoming months. So Elite Room, please stay tuned for that next week. I'm going to take one more question in here for Dave. It says, regarding the oil, did he buy oil futures or individual stocks?
No, I saw my primary go-to trade selling puts or put spreads. So I'm selling on oil stocks and oil ETFs. So, but I'm sticking with the big ones like the XLE, which is, you know, kind of a basket of all the companies in the industry. Staying away from, you know, I've traded them in the past, but I'm staying away from the individuals like the USO or those things right now because of the contango issues with that we talked about last time we were on here. Again, the really good, well-positioned companies that, you know, have great balance sheets that are just, you know, getting kind of caught up in the whole, you know, emotional whirlwind of what's happening here that are being mispriced in the market, I'm taking advantage of that and selling into them.
Awesome. All right, Dave Lucas, thank you so much for being in here with us. You are so brilliant, and we really appreciate you being in here. Elite Room, I'm going to come back into the room for just a couple minutes before we do our Zoom call, our Zoom. And by the way, Dave, if you want to come in, we have a special guest coming in for our happy hour tonight. Elite Room, I will see you soon. Dave, thank you so much. We always love having you in here.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast to discover more episodes, to learn more about people who have created, built, and lived successful lives. Also, remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters. Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.